Thank you. I'm Adam Bedard, CEO and founder of ARB Midstream. A little bit about us. We're formed in August 2014. I left NGL Energy Partners to form ARB. NGL was a highly acquisitive, fast-growing MLP. We've taken some of that DNA with us. Since starting ARB, we've done a number of acquisitions. We're backed by a single-family office, so we are private equity-backed, but it's atypical investor out of Idaho. Ball Venture Natural Resources, that's the energy division of Ball Ventures LLC, and they're a private company headquartered in Idaho Falls, founded by a gentleman named Alan Ball, and they've been a great investor. They certainly given us a good partnership in the intervening 2 years of the downturn. Under the leadership of the CEO of Ball Ventures, Cordy Lydiard, Ball Ventures expanded its portfolio of real estate and private equity investments. So Ball Ventures has a strong portfolio in real estate. Real estate is fairly highly valued today. So they're rotating capital out of real estate and into the energy market. Their Ball Ventures' view is similar of the energy markets is similar to the 08-09 downturn in real estate. So they're getting exposure to the energy market through us via direct investment. Our initial focus was on greenfield development, which is really a private to public multiples arbitrage opportunity. We looked to build assets at a 3 to 4X, and then in the public market or in a monetization event, it would be at a 7 to 9X. But with the downturn, we pivoted to acquisition mode to capitalize on the downturn. So we had deployed some capital early on in our startup into a rail terminal in the DJ Basin. We right-sized that project and then switched our focus to acquisitions in the vein of what we did at NGL. Over the past 18 months, we've reviewed about 60 acquisitions representing $3.6 billion in potential capital investment. I'll talk a little bit about those, show you some of the metrics, but this is really the view from a private equity-backed midstream company. We focus on liquids, primarily crude oil and LPGs. We currently have over $350 million in shortlisted projects. Those are projects that we've got under LOI or have a term sheet or are expansions of our current assets. Since startup, we've closed on over $130 million in midstream assets and marketing group acquisitions. One thing I should mention about ARB, we build, own, and operate assets, and we market around those. So a lot of midstreams will be purely logistics or purely marketing or some blend thereof. We're about 80%, I'd say, pure midstream logistics, 20% revenue generated from marketing activities. We've got we brought to market the rail port in the Niobrara, and we continue to develop our rail port in Midland Basin. So we look at those plays with some of the strongest econs to producers that can withstand downturns, and then we look for acceleration in growth to identify the midstream bottleneck. And we've established a borrowing base and acquisition line of credit. This is all since Q2 of 2014. So visually, we started September 2014. In November, we announced our Niobrara Connector rail port in Evans, Colorado. That's the heart of the DJ Basin, the Niobrara play. In May of 2015, we announced the Permian Gateway rail port. So that facility is on the eastern edge of the Midland play. There's quite a bit of drilling activity there. In September 2015, we acquired SunWest Canada, a marketing group, moving about 20,000 barrels a day into the MidCon. Acquired Incor Energy in 2016. Most recently in September, we acquired the Platte River Gathering System in the DJ. That's 157,000 barrel a day gathering system in the DJ Basin, serving some of the largest producers there. So where we've lined up and our strategies to have exposure across the inland corridor of North America. So, and the way we do that is we have a strong analysis component. We have a quantitative analytics group, spends a lot of time assessing the market, finding out where the growth is going to be and how we can capitalize on that. That really plays into our partnership with our investor who's willing to take a bit more spec risk. So it's a very tough market out there for midstream right now. It's hard to get producers to sign up for take or pay. So what we've done is given ourselves exposure to markets that we know or feel very comfortable from the analysis, we're going to see growth. So we identify we use proprietary in-house research to pinpoint the infrastructure bottlenecks. So we're really looking at getting ahead of the curve. Our name is ARB Midstream, and that speaks to our goal to identify the ARB before it happens. We remind ourselves not to chase the ARB, but be ahead of it. Participate in the market. Be there for when that differential opens up. One thing we learned at NGL is there, as a big MLP, execution was always challenging given the structure of the company, the size of the company. Don't get me wrong, NGL does a wonderful job, but we felt as a smaller private equity-backed company, we could execute more efficiently, more quickly. And then we operate. We've got an ops team currently running our pipeline system, running our rail terminal. So we really pride ourselves on our ability to analyze the market, identify the opportunity, move on that opportunity, and then operate. This is a map showing where our footprint is nominally. We have space on pipelines from Canada into the U.S. That our marketing group nominates on. So that gives us exposure to the activity in Western Canada, certainly rail activity picking up in that market. A lot of dynamic changes going on there. We've got space on pipelines out of the Williston Basin and the Powder. We've got our big acquisition, the Platte River Gathering System. It's a little hard for those of you who aren't as familiar with the DJ Basin. It's northeast of Denver, about 45 miles, a very active play. It's one of the most actively drilled counties, so Weld County is the heart of the DJ Basin. After Midland County, Weld County is the most highly drilled county, currently about 22 active rigs, up from a low of 11. Noble and Anadarko, the big producers, but then you've got PDC, Extraction, who IPO'd recently, Synergy, some of the bigger players in that basin. Our pipeline is carrying barrels from west to east into the Lucerne Hub, which is the inject point for NGL's Grand Mesa pipeline, which goes into Cushing. We've also got marketing operations in Oklahoma. With the acquisition of the Platte River Gathering System, we've got about a dozen people in Oklahoma City who have backgrounds at Enterprise, at SEM Group. They're our ops development team. We do a lot of work in the Patoka market. And then we've got our Permian project that's currently shovel-ready rail terminal connected to Navigator's Big Spring Gateway gathering system out of Colorado City. So we operate in three segments. We focus on gathering and transportation of liquids, crude oil, LPGs, refined products. We've got the gathering system I just mentioned. We've got 600,000 barrels of storage planned at Lucerne Hub. We've got 14,000 barrels a day of truck unload. So our gathering system brings in crude via pipe or truck. We can store it when we need to. We focus on marketing and logistics. So wrapped around our asset portfolio are our marketing operations. We do about 7,000 barrels a day of crude. And we've got capacity on multiple pipelines of about 120,000 barrels. So we use that pipe space as storage. It's sort of a free storage play. And then we do a significant portion of our portfolio is in storage and terminaling. We've got a rail-to-truck crude transload in the Niobrara, and we've got upwards of five more terminal projects we're currently looking at developing. Real quick, as part of what we do and what's in our DNA is our market analytics based on my background as VP of strategy at NGL and before that running the crude oil group at Bentech Energy. But looking at some of the key short-term dynamics in the market, flat prices up, incentivizing rig counts. Rig counts have doubled from the lows. North American production, from our viewpoint, is forecast to grow by 1.3 million barrels a day over the next 24 months. So we're going to unwind a lot of those declines that we saw over the past 18 months. Shale has become more cost competitive when you look at the cost supply curve. Certainly some of those costs are going to inflate, like frac sand and drilling chemicals, but the D&C, the day's drilling certainly is not going to go back up. Storage levels are extremely high, causing concern for rebalancing. So there's a lot of bullishness in the market currently. Our view is a little more on the bearish side. We had a stock build at Cushing this week. Products didn't draw as much. Certainly OPEC has cut, but we're adding rigs at a faster pace today than we did at $100 crude oil. So it's a bit of a self-defeating rally. I think the market takes longer to rebalance. In the marketing arena, we're really looking at when we're going to go from contango to backwardation. At what point do we start truly drawing down Cushing levels? Exports hitting at an all-time high. I think they're at 1.2 million barrels a day of crude exported. But DAPL's the big one. DAPL reshuffles the deck, big pipeline out of the Williston, pulling barrels that are currently moving by other modes of transport. So we're going to see crude oil come out of rail. We're going to see crude oil come out of Enbridge Mainline. We may see some slack from some of the Rockies pipes, but it's going to put a lot of barrels on the Gulf Coast that weren't there previously. So I would anticipate exports to pick up even more. Long-haul trunk lines, big issue for us for midstream, for marketing, is the availability of long-haul trunk lines, compressing margins, people who have take-or-pays flowing crude on the pipeline for less than walk-up. That is certainly good news for a producer, bad news for midstream who depends on those margins, and for marketing who depends on those margins. And then finally, additional capacity will be needed in some plays. We see a lot of tightness out of the Permian in general, out of particular counties, but out of the DJ, Bakken, Eagleford, certainly plenty of takeaway, SCOOP/STACK, we're seeing infrastructure respond, but certainly some tightness out of the Permian. Here's TI and Brent. It dropped by 75%, up nearly double since the lows. And one thing I want to point out is the green represents the Brent TI spread. Certainly fairly tight compared to the 2014-2015 timeframe. But if you look on the right-hand axis, that Brent TI trending around $2 to $3, we see exports respond to this very well. When Brent TI is above $2.25, exports pick up. So certainly at even that small diff, exports are incentivized out onto the global market. You've all seen this, but here's the horizontal rig count since August 14. I use that date because that's when we started as a company, you know, riding down the market with assets we had in our portfolio but having dry powder to deploy. Bottomed out at 314 horizontal oil rigs, currently sitting at about 614. So quite a bit of growth. And to me, the big piece was we are adding 7.5 horizontal oil rigs per week over the past 8 months compared to 6 rigs per week. And here's another interesting. In the DJ Basin, for example, 2 rigs today equals 9 rigs in 2014. So we've now doubled the rig count, and those rigs are much more efficient. Where do we see the rig growth? 149 in the Permian, 11 in the Powder. The Powder went to zero. It's really stood back up a lot of rigs. 8 in the DJ. Quite a bit in SCOOP/STACK at 25. But this just gives you a visual of where we're seeing those rigs come back. And our view is that the declines in production, this is production by basin stacked. So we saw a lot of production additions, almost 1.5 million barrels a day of production growth in the U.S. in 2014, turned to declines in 2015 and 2016. We see those declines reverse. And this assumes current rig count. This assumes current productivity. So there's a lot of upside to production here, which would translate to downside to prices. This is a chart. The top chart is stocks and Cushing. You can see the black line represents crude in storage. Red line is capacity. So there's not a lot of room left at the inn. We've got to start pulling down these barrels before our market can start to rebalance. So real quick on these. We look at land and expand. We enter a market. We build out assets from there and our marketing book. We expand through the value chain. Our typical deal size ranges from 5 to 80 million or 5 to 10 million in EBITDA. We've reviewed over 60 acquisitions in 18 months. So we're looking at a lot of deals. The deal flow is increasing. We're seeing better deals, but still a lot of competition. MLPs are back in the market. I would say through the downturn, very, very strong competition from private equity. We would go into some deals, and there would be 25 companies bidding on it. Real quick, our short list, we have shortlisted deals, which would represent $67 million in EBITDA for us at a cost of $365 million in CapEx. Half of the deals are gathering and transportation, half are storage and terminaling, ranging from $3.2 million in EBITDA all the way up to $20 million in EBITDA. So these are some of our shortlisted deals. This is a nice map. This just shows the location of the deals we're looking at. So 10 deals we've looked at in the DJ, 10 in the Permian, 8 in Scoop Stack, and really a lot of focus through Inland Corridor with some deals coming to us for terminals on the Gulf Coast. This chart just shows the change in bid-ask between 2016 and our latest. So we've actually seen multiples in the Bakken for the deal grow, whereas the DJ, we're seeing some multiples compression. This is just based on our data set. Permian in the upper right-hand corner represents a much higher entry point for the Permian at a high multiple. So you hear a lot of discussion. We're hearing of midstream companies slitting their throats. Certainly, we like the Permian for a lot of reasons, but it's hard to enter that play. And this just shows a bit of a matrix on we also look at market size, margins, cost reduction, revenue improvements, access to capital, and we're sort of ranking all of the deals to see, do they line up with our strategy? Do they provide growth? Are they strategic? Because sometimes you see some nice deals come through that are really attractive from a deal standpoint but might not fit into your portfolio. So I'm going to wrap up there. I have time for maybe one or two questions. Certainly I'm around. I speak on the panel in about 20 minutes, but here's a question.
So, Dave, unlike the others, you don't have a drop-down from a sponsor. So can you sort of focus as to what the advantages that are versus
yours? So as a private company, you're correct. We don't. Our goal is to develop MLP quality assets so that when we as a private company look to monetize, we've got highly contracted assets that are qualifying income for MLPs. So our advantage is we're a private company with relatively cheap cost of capital. But yeah, there are no drop downs in what we're doing. But as a private company, we can take a little more risk than we could at the MLP level. I'm not sure I answered your question, but when I think tier drop down, I think public company. We are not an MLP at all. We're, what I'd say is we're a private MLP. So we're structured and we develop assets like an MLP, but we're private. It's a different structure just as private equity. So we're a management team funded by private equity with a payback and a waterfall. But were we to go public or monetize, this would fit in well with an MLP portfolio. Thank you.